on today's Run to the Top podcast.
It's been working for you. Stay with it. But I also like to recommend that people be curious, especially those folks that are doing more running or are training for longer distances. Then they may not yet be engaging in or practicing having a couple of shoe models within their sort of weekly repertoire.
Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast from Runners Connect, where it's all about learning from the best and most inspiring minds in the sport. Together, we can train a smarter, healthier, and faster running community. Now here's your host, Stephanie K. Atwood.
Welcome. This is Stephanie K. Atwood, Boston Marathon qualifier, coach, and host for the Run to the Top podcast. Shoes are probably the most important piece of a runner's equipment. The ongoing search for the best shoe for each of us is a challenge and an opportunity to improve our running. Better times, less injury, less pain, and terrain-specific characteristics are some of what we are looking for in the perfect shoe. Is there a best shoe for you? Brian Smith is the area manager for Running Room, an independent running store, and he is here with me today to discuss the top 2020 running shoes from his perspective. Brian has been running since he joined cross country in high school, but really came to love the sport as an adult. He joined a Running Room Learn to Run training clinic in 2001, and like so many of us, became hooked. Since then, he has run 5 marathons, a ton of half marathons, 10Ks, 5Ks, sprint and Olympic distance triathlons, and 2 half Ironman triathlons. He has not yet qualified for the Boston Marathon, but is hoping his running pace will catch up with his age one of these days and qualify him for the coveted BQ. He has taught more running clinics than he can count and worn through many pairs of shoes during his running career. Let's hear more details directly from Brian. Welcome, Brian Smith.
Thank you, Stephanie, for having me.
Thank you for being here today. This shoe issue actually for me is so exciting because I, like, you know, most runners, am really fascinated by what's going on with shoes, and look forward to your opinion on what's new in 2020.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, it's you know, I work with shoes every day and talk with people about them and also with staff in our stores. And it's, I mean, it's always been a hot topic. It's no secret that we sell a lot of shoes, but we love to talk about them and we love to test them out and really, really get into the seams of everything, really.
Indeed. And there's so many different shoes out there, and there also are many different needs from runners. So we'll get a chance to talk about that. But first, I want to go through our 4 basic questions, and I'll ask you all 4 and then let you answer all 4. What is your age? Where were you born? Where do you live now? And what is your favorite race distance or type of race?
Well, right now I'm 45 years old, and I was born in Kingston, Ontario, Canada, which is a few hours east of Toronto. And now I live in Oakville, Ontario, which is just outside of Toronto on the west side. But I work within the city, so I'm about 35 minutes away from the core. And my favorite distance is probably, I would say, like the 10 miler. I don't get to do as many of them as we don't have a ton of them around in my neighborhoods. But it's a fun distance because it's a little bit longer than the 10, but it's not as much. It's not as much time involvement as a half marathon. So
yeah, indeed.
It's a great one to sink your teeth into, I think.
10 miles is a good distance. And actually, I want to clarify something with you because you use kilometers up there in Canada, right?
This is true. Yeah. So sometimes we don't even get 10 milers. Sometimes they're 15K. So 10 miles, you know, for those not great with the conversion, that's about 16 kilometers. And so it's kind of a funky distance for us here, but once in a while, there's a couple. There's one on Boxing Day, which is the day after Christmas, just west of me, and then we do another one in the summer within Toronto. So so a couple times a year we can really get at that distance.
And when we're talking, do clarify for us kilometers and miles, because as I understand it, you Canadians have a good handle on both, and we Americans, as a general group of runners, tend to pretty much stick with the miles, except for, of course, we know 10Ks and 5Ks, those make sense. But the other distances, it's miles, and then it's like 13.1 miles or 26.2 miles. So yeah, so help us out with that when we have a chance. That would be great.
Of course, yeah.
Thank you. So start with a little bit about your stores, the Running Room. How did they get started? What kind of runners do you serve? I have specifically chosen independent running stores because I want an independent judgment of the kinds of shoes that you're telling us about.
Sure. Well, the Running Room got started here in Canada in 1984, and it got started in Edmonton, Alberta, so in the west, kind of in the Midwest of Canada. It got started by a gentleman by the name of John Stanton. It's a family-owned business. His sons, John and Jason, both grew up working in the stores, and now are the three of them really run our company. We've grown quite a bit over the 35 years since we got started. We now have 80 stores across Canada. We have seven.
Wow.
Yeah, we have seven stores in the U.S. So it sounds like when you've got that many stores, how are you still an independent? But because we are, you know, a family business, and strictly so, it is it's great that we're not, you know, that we are still, we've, being the size that we are, we've got some buying power, but it's good for keeping standards across the country.
I really like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so our stores have the retail access that everybody is used to when they walk into a running specialty shop. So we've got our shoes and other gear for runners. But something that's made us unique here has been our training programs that we've offered since the get-go. So since we started the company, and that was to make running accessible for everybody. So whether you're just getting started, and want to learn how to run for 20 minutes, or you want to go through all of the major distances, like we mentioned, with the 5K, the 10K, half marathon, and marathon, and then get stronger at any and all of those distances, we've got training programs that happen pretty much daily in every one of our stores. So any night of the week, we've got a group meeting at a shop, and they have a lecture process, and then they'll go out for a workout. And then every one of our stores on Wednesday nights and on Sunday mornings hosts a run club. So whether you're in a clinic or not, you can just drop in for free and go for a run. And that happens at all of our Canadian locations and then all of our U.S. locations as well.
And where are your U.S. locations?
So right now we are, for the most part, we're centralized in Minnesota. So in the Rochester and then the Twin City areas.
Okay.
And then uniquely, we have a shop in Hawaii, in Honolulu. So, I mean, there's certainly a story to go along with that, I'm sure. But we do have a shop over there. And I can tell you that every one of our staff members, especially those in Canada, is just itching to get a chance to go over and either work in that store or visit that store.
Yeah, I wonder why.
Climate change, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And that actually, I want you to address the weather issue for people who are running in a four season kind of climate, because you're far enough north, and I actually have a client that I work with who lives in Toronto, and so, you know, he's giving me these abominable temperature ratings and also the weather itself, you know, icy trails and sleet and all of that kind of stuff. So when you're talking about shoes, please do, you know, give us some insight on that aspect, which for me, of course, where I live and a lot of us in the southern climes, we don't deal with such extreme weather, but it's definitely an issue for shoes that we wear, and would love to hear more detail about that. I want to go on to your favorite type of running personally. What is your thing?
Well, typically I've stuck with road running. That's what when I first got started, as you said in the beginning, my first introduction to running was through cross country. So we would train on sidewalks and a little bit on park paths. And then of course we would do our racing on grass and turf. And that was a little softer. And for a 14-year-old, it was a little bit nicer to be in trees than it was on the sidewalk and mm-hmm. be seen by everybody who was just getting started running. But as I became a runner as an adult, it was really sidewalk and park path running and then road running and racing. So while I'm not a speedster, I like to be out there, and I like to be out there daily and really engaging with the world around me. But in recent years, I've also engaged in a little bit of the obstacle course racing that's come up just for some variety. So So it's a little bit off-road, a little bit of different activities and a lot of mud, mm-hmm. Which has now led me to foray a little bit into trail running and did my first trail run this past fall at a 25K. So that's just a little over a half marathon. So probably in about the 15 mile range thereabouts. So
nice. Yeah. And this seems to be a direction that a lot of runners are going in. They're road runners maybe primarily, but they've tried some of these obstacle courses. They're getting into triathlons. I know you've done some. They're mm-hmm. doing more trail running, you know, just to kind of up the interest a little bit, maybe keep it a little more varied, so it's a little more interesting.
Yes, and while I don't particularly get root bored, mm-hmm. I find that it's one of those things that if you've got a little bit of variety, then it keeps your body guessing, and it keeps, like you say, it keeps you interested.
Yeah,
and it gives you more stuff to talk about, because we have so many folks that have so many different interests and desires when it comes to their sport of choice that. If we can speak to that, then we're helping more people too.
Indeed. I like that. So favorite races in and around Ontario. You know, it's funny to me that you're really not that far away from, well, you're right over the border from a lot of the U.S., and yet we don't have much of a sense of what goes on in Canada in terms of running races. And I'm curious about that. In your area, what are some of the popular races and some of the distances?
Yeah. And just to speak to how close we are, like we're about an hour away from Buffalo in New York State. And, mm-hmm. And if folks are coming from Michigan, then we're about 4 hours east of Detroit. So just on the north side of Lake Ontario. So sometimes when Buffalo gets really nasty winter weather, we're not quite getting the same weather as they are. So we are pretty close and accessible to folks. But some of the favorite races in our area, we've got a really kind of a storied race in Hamilton, Ontario, which is about 45 miles or 60 kilometers west of Toronto, called the Around the Bay 30K. Mm-hmm. Which is about an 18-mile race. So a unique distance. It runs from Hamilton around this big bay and goes into Burlington, Ontario, and then back into Hamilton. And it brings a little bit of everything from a road racing elevation change perspective, because it's a pretty flat race for the first third of it, and then mm-hmm. it starts to get a little bit rolly. And then you get to experience some significant hills and then finish on a really soft downhill. So it's challenging. It's at the end of March, so the weather can really be anything. It can be a couple of degrees above freezing. It can be rainy. It can be sleety. It can be below freezing, and you can have a big snowstorm. So it's really unpredictable from a weather perspective, but it's a great training race to prepare people for a spring marathon if they've got one coming up at the end of April or the beginning of May.
Yeah, good time of year, March.
Yeah, exactly. And usually you're coming out of the winter a little bit at that time. In May, sort of at the end of the May marathon season, Ottawa, which is the capital of Canada, and it's a little bit east in Ontario, not at the end of May. They do have one at the end of May, but the one I'm thinking of is in September, and it's called the Army Half.
Okay.
And the Army Half Marathon is kind of a special run. It's been around for a few years now. It's a pretty fast race. It can be. It's pretty flat there. Ottawa's got a very vibrant running and cycling and active community year round. They've got beautiful skating in the wintertime on the canal up there. But the Army Half, because of its involvement with the military, has a ton of heart. Very similar to the fall Marine Marathon. Marine Corps in Washington, where you've got great engagement from the military. And they even have a division where you've got wounded warriors that are participating. And so there's a ton of heart, but there's also a ton of serious athletes that like to go up there, and they often have it as a qualifying event for other races. And then of course, Toronto hosts a marathon in the fall, in October, in the fall marathon season. And then another one through another organization in May. So, I mean, there's a lot going on. And I mean, certainly on the West Coast, where the weather is beautiful most of the year, in Vancouver, they've got a gorgeous race in May. But Ontario has really started to explode with trail running. North of the city, a little bit east of Toronto, there's gorgeous forests and lakes all over the place. And so there's quite some technical races that have really blown up in the last 10 to 15 years.
Nice.
In our neck of the woods. So not too far, like within a 45 minute drive, you can catch a lot of fantastic running. So
nice. All right. So now we are moving into shoes in general. Mm-hmm. Shoe and equipment considerations for runners in climates where it gets really cold, snowy, and where you also have four distinctive seasons up there in Toronto.
Yeah. Yeah, very much so. The winter is winter. Right now, we're experiencing quite a mild winter. At the beginning of January right now, we've had hardly any snow, and it's been hovering around freezing and even getting up a little bit warmer and rainy lately. So, but we're expecting some typical weather, which, you know, gives us sometimes a foot and a half of snow, and we'll often hold on to that right through March. So it gets icy, it gets nasty. Mm-hmm. And so then of course we want to consider gear that's going to, you know, repel wind and rain, and then also gear that's going to provide some insulation, and footwear is no different than that. I mean, it's nice to stop the wind and the rain from blowing around the rest of you, but you need traction. And so there's certainly product that we'll talk about for that. And then as you come out of that and into the better weather, then it's just, you know, spring is rainy, fall is rainy, and then the summer, where we are anyway, the summer can get really hot and humid. I mean, it reminds me a lot of Southern Florida when it comes to our mm-hmm. summers. So it gets really sticky. It gets into the high, for US listeners, it gets into the high 80s, 90s, and then you throw in Humidex and it's getting over 100.
Wow.
For those of us here in Canada, that's in the mid to high 30s for us. In Celsius, and that's hot and sticky. That's definitely air conditioner weather.
So you either have to run early or late, I would think. It's hard to run in the middle of the day.
Yeah, for folks that really, I won't lie, I'm a hot weather runner. I mean, I run year round, but I love that hot, sticky stuff.
Whoa.
So I don't know why, but growing up where I did in southwestern Ontario, it was even hotter and stickier. And so it was just the way it was. And we've gotten used to it, but winter running brings some beautiful opportunities too, because it can just be stunning out there. So
talk a little bit about the uppers of the shoes, and also any kind of extra tread that you might have on the shoes, to even maybe extra equipment, you know, that you would put on your shoes to be able to run in those cold winter days, icy especially.
Yeah. What's wonderful with footwear, and it's continuing again this year with even more offerings, I think, that are out there, is Gore-Tex has really become a fabric that's come into the footwear realm. Mm-hmm. We've got a number of models that we have in our shops that are using that water-resistant yet breathable fabric on the upper to keep the gross stuff out of your feet. Then they're also offering a little bit more aggressive treads. Some of the shoes are based off of trail models. Some are road models that have just made their treads a little bit more tough, a little bit stronger rubbers, a little bit more tactile sense to them. Saucony in particular has a model that they do a couple of models that they call their Ice Plus versions of trail shoes that actually utilize a type of rubber that it's almost micro abrasive. So it's designed specifically to stick to wet ice.
Oh, nice.
So not only do you have a trail tread, which is fabulous for biting into dirt and mm-hmm. snow. But you've got this rubber that's designed to actually adhere a little bit better to ice than anything else does. So
Nice. Okay. So innovation for 2020, what is different in 2020? What kinds of new things are we seeing? Because every year there's at least a few new things.
Yeah. This year, I mean, one of the big things that's really been happening over the last few years is stack heights in running shoes. So that's the how much foam you've got in the midsole of your shoes. That seems to be growing. And really, it seems to be following a trend that came about with the advent of Hoka, the brand Hoka One One running shoes, where they were developed specifically with a very tall foam midsole. And a nice rocker sole to it too. So it's got really good flow. They're extremely light given that they have so much foam. And we're seeing in other brands that stack height is growing. I mean, there was a trend years ago to go minimal and go thinner and thinner. And certainly in racing shoes, we still see quite a bit of that, the weight of the shoe shaved out by literally having a very, very thin midsole. But nowadays we're seeing, you know, more brands and brands that we all know, not like an unknown or a relatively unknown like Hoka. I mean, although us in the running world, we know Hoka, but to the average consumer, maybe walking into a store for the first time, they aren't familiar with it or they're hearing about it. Nike, with its Sub 2 project and the subsequent work that they've been doing on their shoe technologies, you take a look at their 4%, their Next Percent, even their Pegasus Turbo editions, they've got a lot more foam than even Nike's been using in the last few years. New Balance has put out a shoe called the More. It's very plush. It's got a very tall midsole. They still maintain their typical 10 millimeter offset or drop between, you know, how much foam they've got in the heel and how much foam they've got under the toe, but they've got a lot more than we've seen in the past. And that's attracting a lot of people who like to cushion joints as we get a little bit older chronologically. And more experienced as runners, some people, you know, they want to have a little bit more, not just perceived shock absorption, but literal squishy cushioning between them and the ground.
Right. Now, what about this whole wafer thing? Is there anything in the retail market related to that, or are the retail shoes staying away from that until it's more clear if that's legal or not?
Yeah, they're. Those sorts of things don't seem to be trickling down so much. And quite honestly, we're not getting a ton of questions about that from the average person. You get one or two people that are really tuned in to what's going on in the elite world. And but it's still right now, I certain things people reserve a little bit of judgment on, I think. So,
And the majority of us we're not at those levels, we probably wouldn't want to pay those prices. And it's kind of at least at this point, it's a non-discussion item.
Yeah, still now it is. It certainly, I mean, you know, here, you know, we're seeing, you know, average shoe prices go up each year. And here, you know, it's not unusual for us to be flirting with $200 on a pair of shoes. Mm-hmm. Our US store counterparts, that'd be, you know, flirting with the 150, 160 range. But when you're dealing with those real specialty models, like the Nike Next Percent and the Icodin levels or the series shoes, where they're for us, those are over $300. And so, you know, you've got that's a very specific customer that's going to not just be curious about it, but that wants to actually commit to using something like that. And seeing how that's going to impact their running in a real way.
Right. It's a huge investment. Yep. And if you believe in having a few pairs of shoes at all times, then that's a major investment. Yeah. Well, let's move on to favorite shoes. And let's go into this basic trainers, because that's where most of us spend most of our time. So road basic trainers, what do you have to give us for your favorites?
Okay, well, a favorite of mine, and it has been for a number of years, and the last couple of years in particular have just been super, from my perspective anyway, but we've been getting some great feedback as well, is a shoe by Brooks. It's called the Adrenaline. It's on its 20th edition, so it's been around the block. And Brooks has done, they were one of the brands that was first to start using. I'm a stability runner, so I need to use a shoe, and I've tested, neutral models, and I've tested stability models over the years and fallen into that stability shoe. So it's got a bit of guidance built into it, just to keep my knees in a really nice position so that I can keep doing what I love. So it, over the years, they were using a second density of foam, this little chunk, if you will, under the arch that helps to stabilize things and keep the body from torquing inwards. And they've changed that over the last two models, and they created what they call guide rails. So it acts almost like a bumper bowling scenario where if you start to tip in either direction, inwards mostly, but a little bit out even, it will balance you back to the middle of the shoe. So it acts very much like a neutral shoe. It feels very neutral. It's got a lovely cushion to it. And that's been my go-to shoe for a few years. While I run in a bunch of shoes, and I quite honestly have lots of access to shoe models, so I not only have a habit, but I have a bit of, some people would say, a problem, because there's a lot of shoes in my closet. But that is a model that's been kind of near and dear to me for a while now.
Tried and true. And it just keeps getting better, huh?
Yes, absolutely. The uppers have, their shoe brands, not only are they utilizing new materials like Gore-Tex for dealing with bad weather, but for the other times of the year, the materials are now much lighter than they've ever been. They're using engineered mesh. So instead of putting overlays, and so where you've seen cut and sew and lots of seams on shoes, now they seem a lot more seamless. Some of them are actually fully knit uppers. So there's a little bit more flexibility for folks that have, a broader forefoot, or they might have a bunion or 1 foot where one particular toe just wants to do something different.
Yeah.
These are much more malleable, much more accommodating uppers to the shoes, and the adrenaline's one that really takes advantage of that and helps people. So it's not a light shoe. Mm-hmm. It's not super heavy. Men's, you're coming in around like 10.3 ounces.
Okay.
Women's about 9.4 ounces, mm-hmm, on a size 7. So so it's kind of a middle to slightly heavier middle model. That one's been lovely. Another one that I really like to use, and it's surprising to me because when you get familiar with a shoe, sometimes when it works for you, it actually feels lighter, even though on a scale it might show up as heavier.
Right.
So when I want to feel like I want a little bit more pop, New Balance has got a model called the 860, which is another stability model for those that run neutral. One that feels and works very similar to that would be the 880. And they come in, they're actually heavier. Like they come in at 11.8 ounces for the men's, 9.7 ounces for the women's. And yet the foam on it is a little bit denser than on the adrenaline. And so it gives me more of a poppy sensation. I can turn over a little bit faster. And so it makes me feel a little bit closer to a racer
than
my everyday run feels like.
You know, it's curious. I'm thinking while you're saying this that if these are heavier and they're training shoes, then of course, if you go into a lighter racing shoe, then you're going to have the benefit of having worked a little harder with these slightly heavier training shoes and, moving into a racing shoe that's nice and light and can make you as fast as possible.
That's right. And if I were to like switch over to racing and road racing in particular, a model that I've really kind of glommed onto in the last little bit is another New Balance model called the 1500. Mm-hmm. It has a neutral counterpart called the 1400 that's been around for a number of years. And yay for stability runners. We have recently been, there's some offerings out there that accommodate that little bit of pronation that some of us still have. So, mm-hmm, and when you want to run a little faster and still last on race days, whether it's a 5K, I can use these up to about a half marathon distance. And these are like for a men's, this one's an 8.6 ounce shoe.
Wow.
So yeah, so we're shaving a couple of ounces off of my everyday shoe, mm-hmm, and even more so off of the shoe that I like to run once in a while in. So, and they've got a lot less foam, but they still maintain like a 10 millimeter offset. So, the 1500 has a 6 millimeter drop on it. So, yeah.
Now, you also said there was a Hoka that you recommend in this range.
Yes. So the Hoka, one of the most popular Hokas has been a model called the Bondi. That's B-O-N-D-I. And it's been very popular. It's kind of their flagship model, highest cushion and what have you. I think it's on its sixth edition now. And so when you think of shoe numbers to be around for 6 years, when you compare this brand to the brands that we've, you know, become familiar with Nike and Brooks and New Balance and Asics and Saucony and the like, this is a relative newcomer. And in the last few years, they've made a stability option called the Arahi, A-R-A-H-I. So they utilize a little bit of firmer density foam to provide a little bit more rolling stability for those of us that have a little bit of wonkiness in our ankles and knees. And this one is, like their other models, it's about a 5 millimeter offset on the foam from heel to toe, but it's got quite a stack height of foam. So you're taller in that shoe and you've got tons of plush cushioning. But somehow, whatever they've done with their ingredients in their foam, they are extremely light sensation. So feeling anyway, they're still in the 10 ounce range. Mm-hmm. But when you see a shoe that looks like it's got that much marshmallow under your foot, it looks like it should be a bit of a brick, and they are anything but. So they are fantastic.
Yeah. Now, talk about prices for these. You've given me a few different models. What are the prices like?
So the Adrenaline, which I mentioned first, is around the 130 mark. That's mm-hmm. US. Mm-hmm. Here in Canada, we're looking at about 30% more. So those ones are sitting at about 170 for our mm-hmm. Canadian listeners. Okay. The New Balance 860s, those are similar. They're in the 130 range. Mm-hmm. The New Balance 1500s, they're a little bit less, but being that it's a specialty shoe, they're often priced similarly to higher cushion models. It comes in around 125 US.
Okay.
The Hokas are very similar to that in the 130, 135 range. So.
And that Hoka model was Hoka Bondi?
The Bondi is the neutral model.
Okay.
And then the stability offering that they do, and they only do one stability model currently, and it's called the Arahi.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Now let's move into trail runners and tell us a little bit about trail runners, maybe transition where you could actually run both road and trail, and then maybe something for a little bit heavier duty trail running.
Of course. Yeah. To go between the two, and certainly in the area that I live in, you have to do a little bit of both. Mm-hmm. You might start out on a little bit of road just to get to a trail, or you may have to park somewhere and then get yourself in. So one that transitions quite well and isn't getting into like pure trail specifics would be one by Brooks called the Cascadia. They're on the 14th edition of this shoe. This is a really neat shoe in that they've incorporated, certainly the upper is built to be dirt and stone abrasive resistance. Mm-hmm. It's got a great trail tread, but it's got these little pivot points that they put on the forefoot, both on the medial and the lateral sides of it, and then again at the heel. So while it's not a stability shoe, it's got these balancing points, and they've done this since the very first edition. So for folks that, you know, when you're running on a trail and the ground can be very uneven, it helps to balance things out underfoot. So that can benefit a neutral runner, certainly, but it also benefits a stability runner because we don't see much in the way of stability additives to trail shoe midsoles by virtue of the fact that the terrain is constantly changing. And so the logic has always been, well, let's not tip somebody out or possibly put their foot in that position if there's instability. So, mm-hmm. So it's a great shoe for those folks that are on the fence about getting into trail shoes because they can use it from a road onto a trail. And for those that might have stability needs, it can be pretty handy. Those are about 130 and the women's is about 8.9 ounces.
Okay.
Men's comes in a little bit beefier at 11.2. Okay. So, and they also do a Gore-Tex edition for that. The base is the same, But then you've got real wet condition offering, or for those that want to use them as a winter running shoe in snowier areas, they can be a really nice winter option for folks.
Nice.
Hoka, I know I'm talking about Hoka a bit here today, but Hoka does, and we've just had a lot of questions about them recently and interest in them. Hoka does a model called the Speed Goat. And it's become kind of a sought after option. It's got more stack height than folks are used to seeing in a trail shoe, but certainly not as much as what's in their road shoes. It's got a Vibram rubber base, so you've got a fantastic quality, almost sticky type base. They call it Mega Grip on the outsole, and it really is fantastic for getting onto onto rocks. And it's not quite as it maintains a bit of a tactile sense even when it gets wet. So it's fantastic. It's lighter than the Brooks one. It's about 10.3 ounces for the men's, still around 8 ounces for the women's. And it's only got a 4 millimeter drop. So that means, you know, the terrain's different when you're running a trail. So you may not be as concerned about calf muscle extension and Achilles extension on trails. So that may not be much of a transition for folks.
Okay. And price wise on this Speed Goat?
Yeah, they're coming in at 140.
Okay.
So we see that, you know, for us here in Canada, that's in about the 179 range.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Now racing flats. What about road and trail racing flats?
So on the road, the New Balance 1400 and then for stability runners, the 1500 have been fantastic models because they've been following or continue to follow the traditional model of a trail shoe where you've got a very lean upper. It's an engineered mesh, so it hugs the foot. There's not a ton of overlays, so that helps keep a little bit of the weight off. And then you've got the thin pressed EVA or Rev Light, as New Balance calls theirs, foam material. When you look at the tread, it's very the base of the shoe is has a ton of flexibility built into it. Not a ton of rubber on there, and those really move for folks. I mean, there's a lot of people now running in the Nike 4% models. So you've got more beefy foam. It's still magic in that they keep the weight down. They keep them in that 8 ounce range even for men. And those are popular, but not everybody's going to go to that price point. So for something that's in that $100 range, $120 range, the New Balance models make for a stalwart racing shoe.
Nice.
For road racing. Yeah, very accessible for folks and easy to find.
Any others?
Yeah, Saucony. I haven't talked much about Saucony, but Saucony's got this fantastic model called the Kinvara that has been around for 10 editions now. And they use a 4 millimeter offset in this model. It's extremely light. Well, seemingly. The men's is 7.8 ounces.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's for like a size 10, right?
Yeah, size 9. Okay. Yeah. Okay. It is. It's a very light shoe. There's only a little bit of rubber on the base. So just on the heel crash pad and then just at the toes, just so that you don't lose traction at those two critical points at impact. And then take off. It is super light. There's a little bit more cushioning, even though the offset's lower than what you'd see in, say, the 1400 by New Balance. You've actually got more depth of foam overall. So you've got a little bit more plushness there. It's been a favorite of our runners in our shops since it got started. So for the last 10 years, it's hard to believe the shoe's been around that long, but it's about the $100, $110 range.
Nice.
In the US. So it's a really accessible model. And it's lovely. It doesn't feel like a racing shoe when you put it on. You can walk around in it and it doesn't feel like it's super flat. And and it's been a great addition for folks.
Nice. Okay. So we've kind of gone through at least a couple for trail, for racing, for road training. What about just some of your personal favorites that you think our listeners might want to hear about?
Well, I talked about the Adrenaline and the 860 by New Balance. I talked a little bit about the Hoka, which I really enjoy. Mizuno's got a model that I've had some fun with over the last few years, called the Inspire, and its neutral counterpart is called the Rider. I mean, Mizuno as a brand has been around for over 100 years, but they've really focused in on their running footwear since the mid-90s. Mm-hmm. And so these models have really been able to grow up through the 2000s, and they've got a much more responsive ride. So it's not nearly as squishy as some of the other models. You've got a lot more road tactile sense. And while the shoe's not particularly light, these models are, you know, for men are in the 10 plus ounce range, and for women over 8 ounces, certainly getting close to 9 ounces. But you're a little bit closer to the ground, and the way that their foam reacts is a little bit more in the sense that it allows you to feel what's underfoot. And that brings you a little bit closer to that racing sense, even though the shoe's not nearly as light. But they're a fun model to run in. And they accommodate, like they're an accommodating shoe. They've got a really nice fit in the boot of the shoe, so around the ankle and through the midsole, through the lacing area. They give you a little bit more room through the toe box. So it's not a particularly lean shoe in that respect. But I've always found it a bit of a, I often describe it to folks as the chameleon shoe, because I like a little bit more wiggle room in the toe box for me. But I've had feedback from folks that say, you know what I really love about this shoe is that it's a nice snug toe box. So,
interesting. You know, yeah.
Sometimes these things are in the foot of the beholder, really.
Gotcha. Well, my feeling about Mizuno is that I don't know. It's like they watch for a while before they take action, but they've got good shoes and good quality. And as you said, they've been around forever. So, you know, they have, I've run in Mizunos and I liked them.
Yeah. They're just not always that one that immediately pops out. I mean, they don't have the same sort of, in the spotlight cachet of some of the other known brands with Nike or New Balance or Asics, who've been around. I mean, from a rival perspective, those two shoes have been around for a similar amount of time, both out of Japan, but they've taken different directions. And so an accessibility, it sometimes comes into play. So,
yeah. Well, and what you were talking about with the toe box is something that, of course, most of the time we see a wider toe box, and yet some people are going to do much better with a more narrow toe box. So good for Mizuno for offering that. Okay, we are actually getting close to the end of our time. So is there anything else that you would like to add to educate our listeners about 2020 shoes?
Well, I think the biggest thing is, a lot of times we say to folks, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Forgive the colloquialism. But and we stick with what's working. And I would never change somebody off of that. If it's been working for you, then stay with it. But I also like to recommend that people be curious. So if they are curious, especially those folks that are doing more running or are training for longer distances, then they may not yet be engaging in or practicing having a couple of shoe models or a shoe or even a few shoes within their sort of weekly repertoire. And and this would give them an opportunity to try something different and give your foot some variety so that your body's reacting a little differently, adapting a little differently, and maybe actually taking, you know, a run might feel like a bit of a day off if you're in a different shoe. So, so this, if you've got your regular go-to model, and you're thinking about another model, try it out. But I mean, certainly visit your specialty shop and have them take a look at how you move. It's one of the hallmarks of what we do at Running Room. We do a gait assessment before we even take a look at shoes. And make sure that you know how you're moving, so you know what's working for you. Bring your old shoes with you, so that you can take a look at wear patterns and how your body's reacting and spending time on the ground. And then, you know, try another model, because it will actually give you a little bit more life out of your mainstay shoe. And you're not asking yourself to just, or you're not, you know, you're not divorcing your go-to shoe. It's just you're adding some more value to your training. And like I say, there's some exciting things, some cool new models that are, or updates of models that, if people have been curious about, they can give it a go and not break the bank necessarily.
Yeah. Well, I like that advice, because I think for a lot of reasons, it's wise to change the shoes that you're wearing, certainly just to give your foot a little bit different response to the different shoes that you might have on your feet. That's a healthy thing. Just like our training, we don't do the same training run, or we're not supposed to do the same training every day. I think the shoes can make a difference that way as well. And as you said, then maybe you'll find that there's something in this other shoe that really appeals to you. And at some point, it may even become your favorite. Who knows?
That's right. I've got mainstays that I use for long runs, but but if I've got a speed work run or if I've got a hill run, I've got different shoes for those entirely. And that speed work shoe is usually the shoe that I'll employ on race day. So it gets a little bit of mileage. It doesn't feel like a brand new shoe that I'm putting on race day. And then hill day, you know, when you want a little bit less weight necessarily because you're trying to defy gravity and do repeats up and down, it's kind of nice not to feel like you're carrying a weight with you. So, yeah.
And the part that you said about visiting a specialty store for running, what I've noticed about going into these stores where runners are serving you, there's a lot of variety in the type of shoes that you can find out about. And there's a lot of energy. There's a lot of enthusiasm. These people who work in these stores love running. Otherwise, they're usually not there. And so, you know, both they can give you what they've been trained to do in a store that specializes in this kind of stuff, but they also can give you their own personal experiences, which can mean so much to somebody trying something new.
Well, that's right. I mean, so often, and now, you know, with the internet, people are doing more research, but there really is a wonderful connection that can happen with between people face-to-face and really talking about it, touching the shoes, trying them on, having that opportunity to either run around in the store, or if the store has a treadmill, if you're fortunate enough to have a store with a treadmill. I've even been to a store, there was a shop I was in one time in Florida that had a track in the store. So
wow.
You could actually run around. I mean, it was quite a big store, but you could run around and really test these things out. And the more that you can, that they give you the opportunity to do that, in an easygoing way, but also like you said, we're so engaged in the sport and we're so engaged with people that we want to talk about this stuff. We want to gab about it, but how does that feel to you? And can you describe that? And then watching people move, you know, we're invested in helping them stay active and healthy in the sport as well. So, So it can be a really great relationship. And then you know where you can go.
So. Yeah. No, I totally agree. Buying shoes in a running store is, for me, that's the way to go. And I love talking over the details with these people because if they don't know exactly, they'll get, you know, their comrade to come over and talk to you. I mean, it's just kind of a fun thing to be runners talking to runners.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now we are going to be moving into the final kick here. Is there anything else you want to say about shoes before we move into the final kick, Brian?
I think one of the things for folks really quickly is to pay attention to how you feel when you're running and listen to what your body's saying. And sometimes folks know what that means and sometimes they don't. But that sense of how long did it take me to recover from my last run? Do I feel achy? How long have I had my shoes for? Because we'll often talk in terms of like, oh, the shoe life is a certain amount of mileage. We'll often talk in the range of about 500 miles, 6 to 8 months, you know, for somebody who's running 5Ks regularly 3 or 4 times a week. But really, bring your old shoes in after you've had them for a few months. If we're talking marathoners, then we might be only talking 3 to 4 months. But
yeah,
bring your old shoes into the store. Ask to try on a fresh pair of what you've got. If they still feel the same, then have at it, but you know, keep going with it. But that time that you come in and your shoe that feels like home, but you put on the fresh one and it kind of feels like, whew, this feels like I've gone on vacation. This is great.
Yeah.
then that might be time. Make a decision that it's time to refresh that. And that then doesn't speak to a brand telling you to buy a shoe at a certain time or even your salesperson to do that.
Right.
It's really you making that decision. And then you can go back and go, hey, you know what? My knees have been bothering me but the balls of my feet have been icky or my lower back has been bothering me. And those are signs that my shoes are running out and it might be time to retire them. I might still keep them because I can't get rid of my old shoes, but but I may not actively run in them as much. So.
Right, right. Well, that's good information, and it is hard to give up on our favorite shoes. But I like that advice of coming in and actually comparing the two shoes. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we see that a lot.
Well, we are going to be moving into the final kick here. So, are you ready for the next segment?
I think so. Yes.
Okay. Sounds good. How about a favorite local training run up north in Canada, Toronto area?
Well, Toronto is right on the shores of Lake Ontario, and we've got a lovely waterfront on the east side of the city. We've got some beautiful beach areas, and on the west side, we've got our Sunnyside Beach area, which is a little bit more green, but no less beautiful. And you can actually run all the way along the waterfront in Toronto using a paved path that's actually, for the most part, it's maintained throughout the year. So even in the wintertime, we can use that. Wow. And actually, that trail becomes part of a larger waterfront trail that can take you almost five cities west.
Wow.
It'll take you like maybe halfway to Niagara Falls from Toronto. So,
oh my gosh,
in and out of parkland and along the waterfront. So it's truly a wonderful area. And it's, like I say, it's multi-use, paved paths. Sometimes you have to go onto sidewalks and a road, but it's fairly urban. But you get wonderful views. And if the sun is just right, or it's an evening run and it's really, really clear, you can actually see Rochester, New York across the lake. So it's kind of cool.
And the name of that trail?
Within the city, it's referred to as the Martin Goodman Trail. And so we refer to it here in the city as the MGT. And but if you head north in the city, Toronto's a big city. The metro city has a population of about 2.5 million people. So there's a lot of green space that people don't always see. And as soon as you start heading north of the city, so from the waterfront up, it becomes slightly uphill and you can get some really neat ravines to run through. And then if you head even just a half an hour north of the city or an hour north of the city, you can get into some really neat hardwood trail running. That's just absolutely beautiful.
All right. That was part one. So second part, recommended book, research, or video on our subject today.
Well, I'm going to keep it close to home on this, especially for the listeners that are either new to this and they're getting into running or they want to expand their distances and repertoire. Our founder of the Running Room, John Stanton, has written a number of books on running. And the most recent one in particular, which is simply called Running, is a model that effectively works as our training program guide. And it is, it's put out through Penguin Books. So it's readily available. It's not in-house produced, or published. And that book is a very accessible voice. John writes and speaks with a really easy voice. And I think that folks, it covers everything from getting started to running through all of the climates, the gear that you might want to use. There's nutritional information, there's heart rate information, even some touches on some GPS use. So there's really a little bit of everything. And then there's very specific training programs put in there. So for folks training that they want to just get out the door and get going for their first 20 minutes, or those that want to train for a 3.5 hour marathon, or be on the road to running even faster than that, there's specific pace point, and it's done in miles and in kilometers separately. So there's something there for everybody.
Cool. And it's good to know about other resources outside of the U.S. because we do, oftentimes we tend to kind of think that the United States is all of North America, but you know, Canada definitely counts in this thing. So, so John Stanton is JohnStanton. And if we look him up on Amazon, for example, would we be able to find books?
I believe so. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And also through your website there at Running Room, would the books be available?
Yes, most definitely through runningroom.com. And if you're in the US, your browsers will take you to our US stores. And we have a very prominent online presence and we're accessible for online sales and shipping all throughout the US and Canada.
Cool. And I love to plug the independent stores. So whether they're independent bookstores or independent running stores, you know, to buy it from the sources is great. Amazon, of course, is just so accessible that a lot of times we use that. But the independents, let's give them a shout out and, you know, give them our money when we can.
I appreciate that.
Okay, so I know that the third question kind of fits in with the second question. A person that you would recommend to speak on this subject?
Of course. Well, certainly John would be wonderful, John Stanton. And because he does a ton of speaking himself year round. He's on the road more than half of the year with race events throughout Canada and then through our US race organizations and things like that. And he's a phenomenal speaker and a wealth of information himself.
Nice.
But I've got another friend who I wouldn't mind talking about too, just briefly, a fellow named Scott Myers, who for folks that are really into racing, ultra racing, trail running, Scott Myers is a great resource. He used to work for Running Room years ago, and he's worked for a couple of different shoe brands over the last decade and a half, and has done things like the ultra, the Western States ultra endurance event and things like that. So he's a great resource as well for especially for those specialty type events.
Perfect. Okay. And so now please give us contact information, both for you personally as well as for Running Room.
Yeah. So at Running Room, I'm B Smith. That's BSMITH at runningroom.com. Though my first name is spelt with a Y, so Bryan. And I have an Instagram handle, bry.runs. So that's bry.runs. I don't put a ton of exploits on there, but I put a little bit on there because we all have to show off that we actually did what we're saying we're doing.
Yeah, indeed. And runningroom.com, how do we get in touch with them?
Well, runningroom.com, that'll get you in touch with Running Room. And then if folks are interested in particular locations in their cities, because we're in 10 provinces, we're not in the three territories yet, but we're in all the 10 major provinces across the country. If they just go to the bottom of the page, they can go to locations and they can find one in their community or wherever they're, if anyone's visiting any of the cities, major cities in Canada, or if they're in the Rochester or Minneapolis areas of Minnesota, or if they're in Hawaii, if they just go right onto our website, they'll be able to find a location. And it's got the individual store's email address, their phone number. Often it'll also list some local running maps that we've uploaded for each store to give people some map resources for when they're in town.
Nice. Well, Bryan, it's been great talking to you. Area manager for Running Room, you have done a wonderful job of sharing your 2020 preferred shoes, especially for those in the northern climes, which just have a lot of varied seasons, wonderful seasons, but, you know, different than us here in California or in Mexico, where I am today, actually. Wow. So keep up the training. Boston will be there for many years to come, so don't give up. And thank you to Running Room Stores for providing an independent family-owned business that is more and more rare these days. So we applaud you for that, and good luck to you individually and your stores.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Stephanie.
Yeah, this has been really fun. And thank you, our audience, for joining us for today's podcast at Run to the Top. If you are Canadian, give us a shout out on our Runners Connect Winner Circle on Facebook by going to runnersconnect.net/FB and tell us how proud you are to be Canadian. Be sure to subscribe to the Run to the Top podcast at runnersconnect.net or on Apple Play, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, etc., and you'll be notified every Wednesday when the new episode is published. And thank you, each of you, for listening. Leave us a review if you like what you hear, and if you have any suggestions for our improvement, let us know. We'll be back next week with another great interview to entertain, educate, and inspire you as you head out on your running workout. This is Stephanie K. Atwood, your host with Run to the Top. Have a great week and a wonderful week of running.
Thanks for listening to the Run to the Top podcast from runnersconnect.net.